Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Tata Steel Limited Q3 FY18 earnings conference call hosted by Investec Capital Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ritesh Shah from Investec Capital Services. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Stanford. On behalf of Investec Capital, I'd like to welcome you all for Tata Steel Q3 call. I'd also like to thank management for giving us the opportunity to host this conference call. I'll hand over the call for further proceedings to Samita. Over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Ritesh. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Tata Steel, I'm delighted to welcome you all to our call to discuss our results for Q3 FY18. I hope you've had a chance to go through our results as well as the presentation, which was sent to the stock exchange and uploaded on our website a couple of hours back. We will share a few highlights and then open the floor to questions. To discuss the results, we have with us Mr. T.V. Narendran, Managing Director and CEO, Tata Steel, and Mr. Koushik Chatterjee, Executive Director and CFO, and of course, several other senior colleagues. Before I hand it over to them, I would like to draw your attention to the Safe Harbor clause on page two of the presentation, which will cover the entire discussion. Thank you, and over to you, Naren.
Thanks, Samita. I'll first talk about the macroeconomy and the industry situation. The upswing in the global economic activity is strengthening, with the global growth projected to rise 3.9% in 2018 and 2019. We've seen the cyclical upturn in the commodities broadening and firming throughout the year, leading to better realizations and stronger performance for the steel mills in both developed and developing economies. In India, demand was more muted, growing by about 1% sequentially and 7% year-on-year. Given this and the strong international prices, many players exported aggressively during the last quarter, making India a net exporter in the quarter. The European steel demand has remained broadly stable with support from major steel-consuming sectors. However, the demand in Southeast Asia remained sluggish during the quarter due to a slowdown in private projects. Coming to Tata Steel's performance during the quarter, the performance of the group improved during the quarter, driven by both volume and revenue growth. Indian operations, which now contributes to about 50% of group deliveries, was a major driver for superior results during the quarter and witnessed strong volume growth of 7% quarter-on-quarter and 10% year-on-year, which is significantly better than the market growth. Growth was broad-based and growth across all our key verticals, and we achieved best-ever sales in our automotive sector as well as for our branded product segments. European performance during the quarter, however, was marginally down due to the plant maintenance activities for upgradation of some facilities, which has impacted deliveries and costs. However, these upgradation activities will help in delivering higher-value products. Our Southeast Asian business delivered strong performance during the quarter, despite weaker market due to better management in rebar scrap spreads. The board has recently announced phase two of Kalinganagar project for expanding the existing plant capacity to 8 million tons. As explained during phase one expansion, the CapEx intensity for phase two will be significantly lower. The capital expenditure for expanding up to the hot rolled coil stage is estimated to be about 16,000 crores, which works out to about $492 per ton for the second phase. In addition to the upstream facilities, we are also investing in downstream facilities in the space with a cold rolling mill and an annealing line and galvanizing line as well, and augmenting our raw material facilities accordingly, and which takes the total cost to about 23,500 crores. We expect to commission this project within 48 months of the start date. In addition, we are also seriously pursuing inorganic growth expansions in India. The bidding process is ongoing, and we will make the necessary announcements as the process unfolds. In respect to the JV with ThyssenKrupp, we signed an MOU in September 2017, as you're aware, to combine our European steel business with their steel division. The JV has strong industrial logic and will be a strong number two player in the European steel industry. The due diligence process is currently going on. Our outlook on the Indian steel market remains constructive, given the steel growth intensity in India, coupled with the development agenda of the current government. European steel demand, too, is expected to be positive, with strong growth from automotive and manufacturing sectors. With this, I'll hand over to Koushik to walk you through the financial performance.
Thank you, Naren. Good evening. I would like to share some highlights on our financial performance. The group revenues witnessed a sequential growth of about 15% year-on-year and 3% quarter-on-quarter, primarily driven by improved volumes in India, and realizations across geographies. During the quarter, our consolidated EBITDA rose by about 59% year-on-year to about 5,801 crores. The EBITDA margin was 17% on a consolidated basis. The improvement in the performance of EBITDA of the group was driven mainly by the Indian operations, which generated an EBITDA of rupees 4,600 crores. The EBITDA per ton in India in the last quarter was about 14,000 rupees per ton, which is an increase of about 3,000 rupees over the second quarter. During the quarter, we took an extraordinary non-cash charge of about 1,115 crores in India on account of the net provisions recognized in respect of certain demands and claims from regulatory authorities, predominantly relating to the mining operations. The group after tax had about 1,136 crores, increased nearly five times compared to last year and about 12% compared to quarter two, which translates into a quarterly EPS of about 12.81 rupees per share. The gross debt during the quarter decreased by about 1,600 crores, mainly due to repayments and favorable impact of foreign currency movement. The liquidity position of the group remains very strong at about 22,543 crores in cash, current investments and undrawn credit lines. Against the full-year CapEx guidance of about 7,000 crores, we have incurred about 5,320 crores up to the third quarter. The CapEx for Kalinganagar Phase 2 that Narendra spoke about will start in the financial year 19. Though, as explained, it will be more back-ended and the pickup in the CapEx typically happens after 18 to 24 months. As you know, we've always looked for ways to optimize our financing and further improve our financial flexibility. The strong credit market at the start of the year gave us an opportunity, and we decided to tap the international bond markets to refinance some of our offshore loans. We raised about $1.3 billion of dollars of U.S. of bonds through a Reg S issuance, of which $1 billion was a 10-year paper at about 5.45%, and the balance of $300 million was a 5.5-year paper of 4.45%. With this, we have not only reduced the interest cost, but have also extended the maturity profile and further diversified our investor base. The company has also announced a rights issue of 12,800 crores, which opens for subscription on February 14. This will help the company strengthen its balance sheet significantly, as well as prepare for the next phase of growth. On the pension side, the British Steel Pension Scheme trustees have concluded the consultation with its members about joining a new scheme with an improved funding position, which would pose significantly less risk for Tata Steel UK. The member consent process is now completed. Approximately 80% of liabilities and assets from the old British Steel Pension Scheme are expected to be transferred to the new British Steel Pension Scheme. The new BSPS formation and the first valuation is expected to be completed by 31st of March 2018. And the new BSPS is expected to have an opening surplus or a funding position of 118 to 120%. With that, we finish the initial comments, and Samita, over to you.
Thank you. Before we throw the floor open for questions, I would just like to remind all participants that we have a rights issue which opens next week on February 14th. As per the publicity guidelines in force, we will not be able to make any forward-looking statements, and I would request participants to bear that in mind. So any questions on volumes or NRs, etc., we will not be able to answer. So request all participants to keep that in mind when you raise your questions. Thank you once again, and over to you, Ritesh, for the Q&A.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star, then one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, then two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star, then one. take the first question from the line of Rajesh Lakhani from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So my question comes on cost. So basically, we have in the presentation you have given that, you know, there was a reduction in the cost of coking coal and lower conversion cost. Just wanted to know what was the coking coal cost per ton this quarter and what was it last quarter and how do you see it going forward? And also if you can throw some light on what were the lower conversion charges.
So as far as the coking coal costs are concerned, between Q2 and Q3, while the purchase costs were on the higher side, the consumption cost was flattish, trending down. We also improved the coke rates in Jamshedpur particularly, and that has helped bring down the raw materials cost. We also used various other opportunities that were available to bring down the costs. So from that point of view, the coking coal cost was not a negative impact for us for the last quarter. As far as Europe is concerned, there has been some impact on the coking coal cost. Though there the costs were more impacted because of the shutdowns. I'll ask Hans to comment on that further.
Yeah, we had shutdowns, quite some shutdowns over there because of maintenance, but also of starting some bigger investments that are and had to be executed. That led to higher cost at the end.
Sir, one more question is regarding the synergies in for the JV. So you continue to put a 400 to 600 million synergy number in the presentation, and recently ThyssenKrupp has reached an agreement with the labors. So just want to understand, wouldn't it dilute the synergies given, you know, you required 4,000 labors to be rationalized for this synergies?
So the guidance that we had given when we signed the MOU was that the cost synergies was about 400 to 600 million euros from the JV perspective. We had also said that there would be a potential impact of 2,000 people on a combined basis on the downstream, which is jointly between the two companies, and a potential 2,000 on SG&A benefits at a later point in time. Obviously, the guidance continues to be the same. I think that was being factored when the employee arrangements are being made. There is the employee arrangements relating to the downstream impact has been articulated by Thyssen in their release. We will do so in an appropriate time as to how it is going to be handled. So it is not going to impact the cost synergies that has been announced so far.
So, sir, if I understand properly, there's still going to be 4,000 employee cuts in the JV?
Yes. As I said, that both companies are committed to the announcements that has been done. How this is achieved, over what point of time it is achieved, will be made more clearer at the time when the definitive agreements are signed.
Thanks, sir. Thanks. Thanks for answering my questions.
Just one. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so your earlier question on material cost decline, actually the inventory levels during the quarter is more normalized, and there was a one-time credit in the opening inventory due to the reversal of excise duty because of the introduction of the GST. So that's the change that you see, apart from the coal consumption cost and the coal purchase cost.
So can you quantify that if possible?
Yeah, we can do that.
It's about 540 crores.
Total, all taken together, is about 1,000 crores. The net impact is about 550 crores.
Understood, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanjay Jain from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hi. Could you quantify this interest cost benefit because of these refinancing?
Sanjay, I think the I would say that it would have a positive impact of about, you see, our, based on our initial guidance which we had given, we had, when we closed, it was at, we tightened by about 40 basis points. And I think the impact will be about $5 million annually.
Okay, okay. Right. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Priyanshi Jain from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. This is Pinakin Parekh over here from JP Morgan. Sir, just two questions. The first is on the IBC stressed auction, various media reports are highlighting about the assets and where bids have come. Now, as per the media reports, four of the bids have come, and Tata Steel is not the highest bidder in any one of them. Now, as part of the process, does the company have, can there be rebids and a re-auction and you, or are these, whatever bids are, would be the final ones?
So, Pinakin, I think the few clarifications. I think we've been looking at, we've been expressing our interest and have given the bid or responded to the bid requirements. Media reports, I can't comment. At least formally, we have not been told on any of them. So I think we should keep it at that. Whenever it's formally told, I think it would be a better point to discuss this. This is more about a resolution plan as required under the IBC. And therefore, I think we would rather say that this is not something that we can discuss at this point of time.
So, sir, just trying to understand, are the resolution plans iterative in the sense the, under IBC, can we have multiple resolution plans depending on the bidders, or what you, once the company submits is the final one?
So the process owner is the IRP, which is the resolution professional, and the IRP works under the instruction or guidance of the committee of creditors, which are the banks. Each of IRPs have their own format and standard for inviting the resolution. What we have got subsequent clarifications more informally than otherwise is that it will be typically possibly be a one bid process given the CVC guidelines that are applicable for public sector banks. And therefore, that's the only area that has been clarified subsequent to the initial bidding process. And we have taken cognizance of those.
Sure. And lastly, maybe I missed it, but the Kalinganagar outage, what would be the volume impact? I mean, how much volume will be lost, or will the entire volumes be met by the inventories at Jamshedpur?
No, I think it's partly both. They will be, we are expecting that in all about 15 days of production is what we will probably end up losing. But what we are doing is, you know, we are advancing some of the shutdowns of the other facilities that were planned for later in the year. So we're trying to see how to minimize the impact. And there will all obviously be, whatever stocks are there in Jamshedpur, there will be a drawdown on that so that the impact on our customers are minimized. So the actual numbers will be worked out as things, you know, take effect. So just now the guidance we've given is about 15 days of impact of production in Kalinganagar.
Understood. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Amit Dixit from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question, sir, and congrats for a good set of numbers.
Excuse me, this is the operator. Mr. Dixit, may we request you to use the handset, please? We can't hear
sure.
you well.
Sure, sure. Now you can hear properly?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, sure. So, thanks for taking my question and congrats for a good set of numbers. My question was with respect to European operations. So, in European operations, due to these maintenance activities and lower yields, we have shown a negative variance of £54 million. Is it fair to assume that this entire £54 million will go off in next quarter?
So, if I may just explain that, over many years, we've often given an explanation that in Europe, the first 6 months are the most strongest months, that is January to June. And the next two quarters are weaker quarters because of the summer holidays and the winter shutdowns. And obviously in the UK, there were some operational issues in terms of longer recovery or slower recovery from the maintenance stops on the mills. And I think this is something that you should trend in as to how our Q1 and Q4 typically runs, given the trends that we have got on fourth quarter of last year and first quarter of this year.
Okay. The second question is also a related one with respect to Europe. So, we saw that some of your competitors in Europe, for example, ArcelorMittal, they showed a much stronger EBITDA per ton of around $89, while our EBITDA per ton is quite low. So, the spreads, how they were for us in last quarter and what they are now, is there some improvement over there?
So, if I look at the spreads which have been there in the last quarter, which was about 273 euros per ton, compared to the second quarter, which was 236, currently spreads are more stable. This quarter, obviously, the first quarter of the calendar year is normally stronger. So, we see that continuing at this point of time.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Saumil Mehta from BNP Paribas Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Two questions on my side. First is, sir, I'm not playing the devil's advocate, but, in terms of the NCLT assets, I mean, assuming that, we are not able to get any large assets, then, given the strong balance sheet what we have with the cash flow generation and a much phased out capex plan over the next 4 years for Kalinganagar Phase 2, how should we look at this large equity raising?
I think the we can take whichever assumptions we would like to. But I think the fundamental aim of the board and the company is essentially to work with a stronger balance sheet given the structural issues that often face this industry. And there are two, three things I would say. One is, of course, the joint venture in Europe will make our European portfolio a more valuable and sustainable portfolio, which is important.
Sure.
Would be looking at deconsolidating about 2.5 billion euros of debt and yet create a capital structure in the joint venture, which is very strong. Second, I think is important to mention that this 12,800 crores is a structural infusion into Tata Steel. Tata Steel always has growth plans. I think this 5 million ton expansion in Kalinganagar is very strategic. And therefore, we, apart from the deconsolidation of 2.5, if we are not into any other acquisition, even this will get into the as an equity contribution into the project, which makes it even more stronger. So I think from a balance sheet point of view, it certainly was required given the overall debt position, and it can be used either for organic or inorganic means. So we will, it's a pool of cash which is very important for Tata Steel. Looking at the future, growth will continue and it will be a mix of organic or inorganic as the opportunities come up. Organically, clearly we have a very strong pipeline. The inorganic bit is a supplement.
Okay. And in terms of any acquisition plan, you know, is it possible to tell us, you know, which, I mean, how do we look at in terms of, you know, geographical diversification, whether on the East Coast or the West Coast, or probably there will be certain confidentiality agreements over here in terms of NCLT assets?
More than that, I think it is, you know, there is a process undergoing, being run at this point of time across geography, so we would rather not comment on it till it gets completed.
Sure. And my second question is with respect to the BSPA scheme, only 80% of the assets, I believe, are being transferred to the new scheme now. What happens to the balance 20% of whatever liabilities what we had?
So, as I mentioned, that it goes through a member consent process. The total number of members is about 122,000 people. 80% of them have responded. People who don't and responded to be in the new scheme, the balance assets and liabilities both, it's not only liabilities, assets and liabilities both move to the pension protection fund, which is under the government, and the balance gets into the new scheme, which will be the BSPS2, as we talked about, with a significantly lower liability profile in terms of future growth in the liabilities.
Okay, okay. And my last one, I just missed out on the, I'm not too sure if you'd give the number. What was the consumed coking coal cost this quarter? Is it possible to quantify that in Q3, which has been passed through P&L?
Yeah, it's about $144 per ton.
For India.
For India.
And the purchase was much higher. You know, what would that number be?
About $166 per ton.
$166. Perfect. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Sumangal Nevatia from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the chance. First on KPO Phase 2, the press mentioned zero date, 48 months from zero date. So have we decided on the zero date yet?
Well, as far as we are concerned, the zero date has happened when the board approved.
Understand. Also, if I look at the breakup, it's almost 5,500 crores for 2.2 million ton CR mill, which is almost $400 per ton of capital intensity. So if you could just elaborate on what kind of returns do we get from HRC to CRC in terms of EBITDA contribution or something?
Yeah, so I think, you know, you can build cheaper cold rolling mills also. But the point is, if you want to build a high-end cold rolling mill to serve the very high-end products and also build a high-end galvanizing line for the automobile sector, then you would spend more. So typically when you look at it internationally, the gap between hot-rolled coils and cold-rolled would vary from anything from $80 to $120 depending on the cycle. But the key in cold-rolling mills like this, with a product mix like this, you will sell to the automotive industry and very high-end where the spreads are going to be much higher. So obviously for us, it has to justify internal rates of return, and that's certainly a you know, threshold that we will check. So so it's a very high end. It's going to be one of the probably the best, if not one of the best cold rolling mills in the country. And basically to make very high tensile steels, which are required, because I think we have one of the best hot strip mills in the country in Kalinganagar. And to support that, if we have a cold rolling mill like this, I think we are all set to cater to the demands of the auto industry in India until maybe 2025 or 2030.
Understood. So second question is, the press mentions some, we've acquired some full IPP for H1 Sarna technology, which could save some 20% on the energy consumption. Is it possible to elaborate on this? I mean, can this be transferred and used in India as well, and could potentially reduce cost of India operations?
So Hisarna is technology which is being developed for the future. It is being developed by it has been developed by Tata Steel Europe and Rio Tinto and a few other companies. So it's been alternate iron making technology. It's an alternate to a blast furnace in some sense. And there are many such technologies which have been developed by different players. This journey is about 10 years old. You know, so we are at a pilot stage. What we have done recently is to acquire the IP from Rio Tinto, who was one of the partners. So Tata Steel today owns the IP now, the share which was owned by Rio Tinto. It was a joint effort between Rio Tinto and Tata Steel Europe with a few other participants. So now we, in some sense, own the IP. We have the opportunity to bring it back to India and use it. But like I said, it's still at a pilot stage. In Netherlands, we are running it as a pilot. We will keep making it after this pilot and this run is successful, we will scale it up a bit. So it's a few years away from a commercial operation. But ultimately, when it's ready for commercial operations, it's an alternative for us because it can use lower quality raw material to make steel. And you also have the carbon emissions, which are more easily sequestered. So from a sustainability and a carbon footprint point of view, also it's a technology for the future. So a lot of work is going on, but it's still at pilot stage. But yes, it has a potential to be brought back to India at a later stage, maybe 5-10 years from now.
Understand. If I may just ask one quick question on the rights, I'm not sure if it's appropriate, but is there any specific reason as to why we are issuing this partially paid up equity?
So I think, you know, whenever Tata Steel has raised equity, it's also kept in mind investor interests, and therefore the way this equity has been structured, equity issue has been structured, also keeps in mind the fact that it provides time for the equity investors to participate with a gap. So given the large size of the issuance that we are proposing to do, it is more in the investor requirement and rather than anything else.
Thanks. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Bhaskar Basu from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Just two questions. One on the coking coal pricing cost, consumption cost. If you can give us the number for Europe as well, the purchase and the consumption cost.
So for Europe, the consumption cost in Q3 was $155.
Right.
And the purchase cost was also something similar.
So just to get a perspective, last quarter average premium hard coking coal prices were around were close to 190 200. And is the 190 $166 comparable to this 200, or it reflects a blend and hence it is actually the like to like basically the discount to 200? I mean, basically looking at coking coal cost next quarter, the benchmark we track, how should we think about the cost?
But there are multiple reasons for it. Blend is one of the reasons, but there is also a contract mix. We constantly look at what should be the right contract mix, how much of it should be indexed, how much should be spot, how much is slightly more long-term contract. So procurement team always looks at it from that point of view and makes changes depending on when they see the markets going up or down. So to some extent, the gap is also a reflection of the way we read the markets and plan our contracts in addition to the blend.
Okay, and does it mean the coking coal prices, which are currently over 200, will flow through with a lag now in the next two quarters, or that's partly already reflected in the current quarter, December quarter?
Some increase will happen. In fact, what you've seen in the last quarter is also an impact of the consumption of coal bought in the previous quarters.
Right.
Some increase will happen in the next quarter as far as the consumption is concerned.
Understood. And in terms of realization, how much increase did we see in terms of NSR during this quarter versus last quarter?
Are you talking of Q3 versus Q2?
Yeah, Q3 versus Q2, and if we can give some color around spot versus Q3.
We can't talk about this quarter, as Amita said.
Spot, can we... Okay, I mean, even Q3 versus Q2?
Q3 versus Q2, I think it was roughly about 1,000 rupees. That was the guidance we had given.
Right.
1,300 rupees to be more precise. 1,330 to be even more precise.
Okay.
And... So that was the increase Q3 to Q2, because most of the price increases actually came in November and December.
Right.
You saw that. And most of the increases in Q3 were largely in flat products, and then it started moving towards long products. So so you saw it depending on the mix. And then we had a impact on the negative side on ferroalloys business. So when you look at the, in the India side, when you look at the consolidated numbers, there's a negative impact of the revenues on ferroalloys, which kind of, you know, brings down this 1330. Yeah.
Okay, got it. But you won't be able to kind of give any color around the spot, where the spot is versus last quarter?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, thanks.
I'm not allowed to.
Okay, thanks. That's all from my side.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in this conference call, please limit your questions to two per participant. If you have any further questions, you may come back for a follow-up. We take the next question from the line of Prateek Singh from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congrats for the good numbers. So, firstly, just taking it ahead on the coking coal cost. So, if I see the cost of raw mat consumed, excluding the inventory changes, QOQ it has gone down by around Rs. 1700 per ton, around $25 per ton. So, is it majorly from coking coal? And if yes, what was the consumption and purchase cost in 2Q for coking coal?
So, I think if you look at the entire material cost, it has gone down by about 3,300 rupees per ton. So as I mentioned first, is there was about a 540 crores impact net on the GST, reversal of the excise duty because of the introduction of GST. Then we had a reduction in raw material cost due to the lower consumption, cost consumed due to the lower cost of imported coking coal. And the finally, the reduction in the raw material cost also happened due to the lower increase in the level of inventory in FMD and lower consumption of purchased pellets. So these are three impacts. Roughly consumption impact about 1600 rupees, and the rest would be in the change in inventories.
And of the 1600 rupees, majorly will be the coking coal cost.
Yes.
Okay, so slide 29 talks of higher coal cost in raw mat. I just wanted to understand what, how is it higher there?
Slide 29 talks about?
So the third row, raw mat consumed, it ends with partly offset by higher coal cost. So which coal cost are we talking about here in standalone?
So this is against Q last quarter, right?
Yeah, versus 2Q.
Just one sec. So if I, if you look at the coal consumption cost in, the coal purchase cost was $141 in Q2 versus $166 in Q3. That's what is reflected, the commentary.
And sir, consumption cost, 2Q versus 3Q?
Consumption was $154 in Q2. Versus $144 in Q3.
Okay, understand. Sir, if I may ask the last question, some more color on this extraordinary provision taken. Is it due to the Odisha mining payment or something else?
No, it is not in Odisha. This is related to coal and it relates to Jharkhand because we don't have coal in Odisha. We have coal in Jharkhand.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Abhijit Mitra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
One question I had. In terms of total pellet capacity that is there in the Indian operations as of now, and given current run rate of production, what is the optimal pellet consumption that, or rather capacity that you'd like to have, again, in the Indian operations? Thanks.
Current capacity is about 7 million tons. It's a 6 million ton plant operating at close to 7 million level. So we look for an ideal mix between pellet and sinter. You know, so that changes depending on the blast furnace and the nature of operations. So, it would be reflected. Largely, we have enough once in a while when the pellet plant is going for a shutdown, we buy some pellets. But otherwise, it's largely balanced, and there is in phase two of Kalinganagar, we are anyway going to add a pellet plant.
Okay. Thanks. That's all from my side. Thanks.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Ritesh Shah from Investec Capital Services. Please go ahead. Mr. Shah, please unmute the line from your side.
Yeah, hi sir. I wanted to understand the Europe operational metrics, specifically given the crude steel production is largely flattish on a sequential basis. Then how should one look at the EBITDA bridge?
Q3 versus Q2. You're talking about Europe, right?
Yes, sir.
And this is the in relation to the 50 million cost changes?
Yes, yes.
So a lot of it would do would do with the raw material cost plus the the manufacturing expenses are more related to the shutdowns, maintenance spends, and because of the plant shutdown period, the yields also suffer. So that's the negative 54 you see in that slide. Yeah.
And the production mix was affected because I think when the recovery happened up post the shutdown, I mean, it was more slabs than the finished products.
Sir, how much was the coking coal procurement cost? You indicated $155 for this quarter. So in Q2, how much would that be for Europe?
For Q2 in Europe, it is purchase was about 152 and consumption was about 164.
That helps. Sir, my second question is, there are press reports which indicate that we have taken some commitment from Adani Hazira Port. Sir, how should we read at this?
I don't think we want to comment on all the press reports, so I think we leave it at that for now.
Lastly, sir, any specific milestones that we should look at specifically for the Thyssen JV, given the due diligence process would be on? If you could provide some more color over here, it would be quite useful.
So we had mentioned in September that as a process step, post the diligence, there is a consultation process that is also an important one for us to complete before the signing of the definitive agreements can happen. The consultation process with the European Works Council has commenced. The Central Works Council in Netherlands will commence shortly. And in the Steel Committee in UK is also being briefed. So, this is an important process, and once that is done, diligence has been factored in. We should be in a position to sign the definitive agreements. We've already approached the European Commission for the antitrust. That information requirement from the Commission will keep coming, and therefore we still stick to the timeline that we had given in the press release for on signing that December 2018. To start the JV.
That helps. Sir, my last question is on capital allocation. It's more of a follow-up to one of the prior questions. Hypothetically, if we don't get any of the NCLT stressed assets, from capital allocation point of view, will it be entirely towards India operations that one should look at, or will we be looking at assets overseas as well?
No. This allocation is, first of all, the equity, as I said, is to structurally help a much robust balance sheet. Our organic pipeline, as Naren mentioned in the part, in the initial part, is very strong. We're starting off with 5 million ton in phase two in Orissa. We have no plans for overseas acquisition as far as steel assets are concerned.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Nitesh Jain from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Mr. Narendran, my question is on the Indian steel demand. So last 2 months, we have seen like a complete recovery and, you know, a huge rebound in the demand, and particularly from the construction-grade steel, be it plate, TMT, or, you know, other products. So my question is, are there some specific projects driving this demand, or you are sensing a, you know, broad-based recovery in the economy? What exactly is driving steel demand in recent months? Thank you very much.
Yeah. So So basically, if you look at the long products demand, it's actually been lagging behind flat products this year. So there's a little bit of long products is doing a bit of catch-up, if I may say so. What is certainly picked up and which is normally seasonal is January to June is normally the best time for construction. So every year, January onwards, always the construction market picks up. And we are certainly seeing the government's focus on infrastructure translating into positive activity, whether it's in roads or railways and things like that. So so there seems to be a pipeline, a backlog in the pipeline which is coming on stream, and that is getting reflected in the greater activity in long products, particularly over the last couple of months. I'm a bit careful in not saying too much forward-looking, so I think...
Yeah, sure. All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Kamlesh Jain from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. Kaushik, just wanted to understand on this 540 crore thing. So is it flowing to the EBITDA as well, or it's just interchange between the items?
No, that is neutral to the P&L.
Okay. And lastly, on this part of CapEx part, like say, all the dues related to like say, KPO project, has that been paid or that would get elongated because we are going to start the new project?
So the phase one tail end is normally almost done. There's nothing much which is of material nature because we are now well over 1.5 years in that project. Typically by end of 2 years, all the money gets over. So the one which will come will be afresh for phase two.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Ashish Jain from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Sir, I have two questions. Firstly, you know, again, on the raw material cost, if I heard you right, you said that the consumption of cooking coal price in India declined from $154 to $144. And the balance is also from, you know, some consumption efficiency. And that is giving you 1,600 rupees per ton of lower cooking coal cost. Is that the right understanding?
Broadly, yes. But I must also add that we also buy coal locally in India. And that also helps us manage our coal costs because we have extra washing capacity in India. So that allows us to buy some cooking coal from the market and wash it and use it. So that also helps in reducing the cost, particularly when the international coal prices are going up. So it's a combination of all this.
So is it possible to share the material cost per ton purely for steel, just to, you know, adjust for the ferroalloys business and the inventory adjustment on ferroalloys and all?
Yeah, Ashish, maybe we can get into this offline and give you some specific numbers then.
Sure. Broadly steel.
1600 is broadly steel.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Maybe we can take one more question before we close.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we take the last question from the line of Pallav Agarwal from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. I was a little confused on the ferroalloys division because the slide 25, where there's the EBITDA bridge for India, it says that there's an improvement in the operating profit at ferroalloys, which supported the others component, which is about 171 crores. So did we have a positive or a negative impact this quarter due to ferroalloys?
So the prices, what we have said in some other question is the revenue impact was negative. But what we're saying here is the operating profit was positive.
And what would that would on account be? Lower costs? Or?
Yeah, it would be on lower costs. Again, coal prices was a big impact on that. So they would have probably seen the benefit of coal bought in the earlier months passing through, etc. But we can get you more details. Shavita can get back on more details.
So this is on the coal consumed in the ferroalloys division.
I'm just kind of answering on the fly.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ritesh Shah from Investec Capital Services for closing comments.
Hi, Samita. Any final concluding remarks?
No, thank you to everybody for dialing in the questions, and look forward to connecting with you again, I guess, next quarter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Investec Capital Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.